Welcome to the Modern Woodworkers Association, a podcast about woodworking from folk who woodwork. Woodworking is what we do, who we are, and what we like to talk about. So join us as we have a drink, sit around, and talk woodworking.
Hi, welcome to episode 148. I'm Sean Wisniewski, and I'm here with my co-host, as usual, Diami Plotke of the Penultimate Woodshop. And tonight we're talking to James Wright of Wood by Wright fame. And I apologize for not having some mildly humorous quip about James.
Sean, are you suggesting that you could not find a direct connection between James and Troy McClure?
Maybe. Maybe. At least one didn't jump out at me. But we'll blame my lack of effort, not the possibility of something being there.
Okay. So, James, welcome.
I am so pleased to be here. Thank you for having me.
Wonderful.
And thank you, because I would have been disappointed had we not started that way. You make your fellow podcast mates proud that you're creeping everybody out.
Yeah. Between that and my bench troll, I tend to creep a lot of people out.
Wonderful. I have to say how excited I am to talk to a fellow hand tool enthusiast. It's always good.
Wait.
Company.
We got to stick together.
You're talking about hand tools?
We might.
All right. Call me when this is over. I'll turn off the recorder.
Anyway, let's just roll right into it. We've all been a little bit busy. Diami, what is up?
Do you know what I did this weekend, Sean?
Nothing.
I used hand tools.
What?
I did.
Were you cutting mortises?
Oh, God, no. No, it's a domino for that. No, I was shaping my headphone stand, the one that I started like 3 years ago, 2 years ago, probably 2 years ago.
That's right. I saw images of that, and I thought they were old.
No. I you know what it is? Is I've got the pattern maker's bench vice bench thing that I built. It's been kicking around the shop now for probably a month or so, and I haven't really put it to use. So I was working on the mantle. Excuse me. And I reached a point of, I was waiting for something to dry. So it was some port in the glue up. I don't remember exactly where I was in the mantle. But I was like, you know what? I don't need to go inside. Let me just keep working out here and take out the headphone jack. So it's been clamped to a 2x4. It's what it actually is. The 2x4 is like Craig screwed in the back of it to provide like a handle so I could carve it. But in the past, it was always, and I'm pointing like you guys can see this, but in the past, it was always clamped into the face vise on my bench, which doesn't really adjust. So I was always like fighting my body into the bench to get the right angle on it to be working on it. So now with it clamped in the pattern maker's vise, just swinging it around, I would work on a face for a little bit. I would rotate the whole thing. I would work on the other face. It was glorious. It was so much fun to work on in that vise. It was way too fat before, so I thinned it out a lot with a grinder. And then I took out my rasps, and I'm never sure if it's Riffler or Rifler. I think it's Rifflers.
It's Riffler, right?
Yeah, they're like tiny little curved rasps. And I pulled them out, and I was making little fine shapes. And it's now 100% shaped, and I'm 85% done with the first round of sanding to get all of the rasp marks out of it. It's basically like a wishbone shape, and right in the crotch of the two pieces that come apart, I couldn't get any of my sanders down into that. So what I think I'm going to do is, I think it's 3M has a fairly new sandpaper they're saying is incredibly flexible. And I've seen it out in the stores, and I've seen it advertised in a lot of the woodworking magazines. So I think I'm going to pick up some of that and buy a piece of like soft plastic tubing. I want to go into like a hardware store and look at the different tubes they have. And I'm thinking if I can stick it to the tube and then I kind of wrap that and kind of work it in between these two, I think that'll give me what I need to sand this section, but I'm not 100% sure that's going to be successful at sanding it, but that's what I got to do next is sand in between the two little arms that come out.
So why is it a wishbone look?
Cause I don't know.
Okay.
I glued up a solid chunk of what is it? It's maple, purple heart, and walnut. It's not even attractive. The three colors don't really go together well. but I just had the scraps, and I was thinking it might be hollow in the middle. I wasn't initially thinking a wishbone, And I drew on it with a black marker, and I take it to the bandsaw and cut it a little bit, and I draw on it some more, and I just kept reducing it till I was happy with it. So, and this is what I've ended up with.
Yeah, that it's a good reason as any.
I need to hang my headphones on the wall next to the imaginary computer we were discussing before. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't I spend 3 years making a rack?
Yeah, right. And if you saw the picture I put on Twitter, I don't have anything to hang anything on, other than the thing to my left and the table to my front, but. I'm slowly changing up my personal system.
I've currently got a 3-inch deck screw drilled into my wall that I hang them on.
Yeah, that works. Yeah. That works. my headphones are ear pods, and my mic is on an arm on my bench, and I sit next to it. So that works just fine for me.
Hey, that works.
Yeah, yeah. Dami, have you ever used a bow sander?
No, I have not. What is it, Bose? I can't even say I know what one is.
I know what it is.
It's basically, you take a bent piece of, well, there's a bunch of different ways of making it, but the way I like to do it is you get a belt sander,
okay,
and you cut it down into like a 1-inch wide belt.
Okay.
And then you get a bent stick and you put it inside that to spring it. And
okay.
So you get this flexible piece that goes underneath, and I found that very, very useful for getting into those tight pieces because it can twist and bend and still has a bit of flex. So you're basically like, if you had a bow, the string would be your
sander. No, I think I understand. Would that allow, would the paper off a belt be flexible enough to sand when it's curved in two dimensions? Or do you think the edges would kind of cut in as it's sanding? I guess if I go lightly and I keep moving it, I shouldn't cut in at the edges.
Yeah, I found that they kind of curl up on themselves, and rather than having a hard outside edge of the belt. It because there's nothing to support in its back, it bends up, so the edges actually curl up in towards the bow.
That's a great idea.
I always just did the thin strips and held it with my fingers and did kind of like the, if you were toweling off your leg kind of thing, going back and forth, you know.
Well, the thing I like about doing the bow is once you get one area worn out, you just roll the belt a little farther and you're to the next clean spot.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
I'm assuming you go for a smaller belt?
The one I have uses 18-inch belt.
Oh, that's actually... Well, no, I'm sorry. I'm thinking that's in length. That's the...
No, the 18 is the...
18-inch circumference.
It's like the circumference of the belt, yeah.
You're right, yeah.
Huh. I have a video on it, but it was like 2 years ago, so I don't know what the quality of it is, but...
It's better than the video I have on it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll definitely check that out. That's a good idea.
You know, so
I'll probably buy an 18-inch belt while I'm at the store too, then.
Beyond your mic stand, your mantle is coming along nicely.
The mantle is coming along nicely. I reached. Did I do anything on it besides final glue up? I did something on it, and then I was ready for glue up, and I did the glue up. But damned if I could remember what I did on it. Oh! I know what I did. I'm staring at it. So the mantle fits on the wall, and there's a horizontal double piece of 3/4-inch plywood that's going to get probably tap-conned or maybe expansionary fastened, but it's got to be fastened to a brick chimney. So I have to use some sort of masonry anchor to fasten that to the brick chimney. And then there are, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. There are 8 arms that are also double 3/4-inch plywood that project out of that first horizontal piece. And those are actually mortised and tenoned in with actual mortises and tenons, not like, they're integral tenons. It's not dominoes.
Schnazzy.
Yeah. Cause you know, it's plywood. Why wouldn't I do a real nice tenon? So what I had to do is I want these arms that come out, they stick up higher than the horizontal piece, if that makes sense. So when it's mounted to the wall, they project out, but they also step up. And so the mantle itself is hollow, and on glued to the underside of the top piece is a cleat that sticks down about 1/2 inch. So what'll happen is the mantle will slide over these arms, and the cleat will drop down into the recess where they step down, and that'll prevent the mantle from pulling out. You'd have to lift the mantle up to slide it out. Kind of locks it against the wall. So I built that, but I wanted all these arms. I drilled out for the mortises, the through mortises. I drilled out for the mortises with my drill press. But then I chiseled them all square by hand. And I don't chisel a lot of mortises, and I didn't trust that I had chiseled them perfectly square. But I wanted to make sure that all these arms were exactly coplanar and 90 degrees to the piece that gets mounted against the wall. So at least I have a fighting chance of having the mantle level. I didn't want them to be kind of up and down and each a little bit different. So I ended up having to take my benchmark table, set it in my driveway. No piece of my driveway is even close to flat. It slopes away from the house, which is good for a driveway and bad for a working surface. So I had to set some shims under the Benchmade table, get it set perfectly level. And then I clamped some plywood onto that perfectly level. And then as I was assembling this cleat, the arms that stick out would all get clamped to the plywood. And then I used, I don't know what they're called, but they're like aluminum L's. Woodpeckers makes them. A couple other different companies make them. They're like clamping blocks to make sure you get a 90-degree joint. So mm-hmm. I clamped them onto these arms and clamped them to the back of the backer piece to make sure that all the arms are clamped to the plywood, so they were all in the same plane. And then the back piece was clamped at 90 degrees to the arms to make sure that those were all 90 degrees. So that took me a while to get that all set up and glued together. Right. And then while that was glued, that's when I was shaping the headphone stand. And then once the rack came out of the clamps, then I glued the bottom. Once I had the racks out of the clamps, I test fit it, made sure it worked before I glued the bottom onto the mantle proper. And then once I knew that it would fit, I glued the bottom onto the mantle. So right now my table saw is sharing the top with my computer, the recording equipment, and the mantle in clamps, which I could take them out, but I just haven't yet. So that's all that I've done.
Okay. Seems like a lot.
And you, Sean?
So school's back in session. So that's a thing. It's made this week particularly, because they just started 2 days ago, like zoom by. I can't believe it's already the weekend coming up. But otherwise, the addition has been in full swing. I am almost completely done with drywall. This past weekend, in the span of 6 hours, I went from a wall with a sliding door in it to no door, to no drywall, to more studs in the old door space, to new drywall on the house side, the previously interior side. It's all going to be interior.
Okay.
Now, I don't know I think it's a common theme. I hope I'm not alone, but the one thing you're least comfortable with is the one thing that holds you up the most. And I've got to do a cold air return in that wall for the room. And I hemmed and hawed for about 3 days about how exactly I was going to cut through the box and how I was going to transfer into the space and how well I needed to, you know, seal that for a cold air return, as opposed to just putting a pan underneath it and letting it go. And I finally cut that in tonight. So I've got like the first piece of panning in, but it's all like contoured up and comes into the hole. And I'm not using just the stud space. I'm actually running a duct down that space to kind of keep it inside itself. But all good things. Okay. It's fun.
What did you seal the ducts with?
Right now it's just good duct tape.
Okay. What just do you plan to seal the ducts with?
True metal duct tape.
Oh, okay. It. So yeah, the foil face tape.
Yes. Foil tape.
It's amazing how much different that is from the paper tape.
Yeah. I know enough that I only use that. As I've looked around the stuff that whoever did the duct work in my house, and it was modified at one point, they used a standard duct tape, which is stickier than shit. Cause I had to take some off when I was, I had to move the existing cold air return near it out of the way for a thing. And real sticky, but doesn't seal very well, as odd as that is. So I'm kind of like systematically going to go through and update those things. The next big step as far as HVAC, which is totally not woodworking related, goes, but I need to tie in two new supplies to my trunk line and tie one cold air return back to the existing cold air return. So that'll be fun. I got to drop 2/3 of my air supply to my house to do that. Uh-huh.
Your house doesn't need air.
In this season, comes and goes. We're in that terrible time where we get like a 20-30 degrees switch and high humidity. So during the day it's well into the 80s and it stormed like hell today, but tonight it's going to be 60. So it's like, oh, we run the air and then we open the windows and then it's just like a constant back and forth. I need a good, like the weekend needs to be in the 70s so I can just drop it and work on it.
So James, are you lucky enough to be doing mechanical work in your house too? Or are you actually building things?
Yeah. Well, actually I'm kind of going back and forth between building things and refitting the shop space. Cause I, a few months ago convinced my wife to let me have more of the basement for my shop.
Okay.
And so part of the deal is I'm moving my office out of the living room and into the shop. That then means that I have to actually build a space for it.
So by the time the shop grows bigger and takes in the office, have you actually gained any space or has she just gained her living room back?
No, actually the office is taking over the utility room space.
Ah.
So I'm actually with the office space almost tripling in size.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Does that mean that you're now using the laundromat or did you move the utility room stuff?
No, actually I've been building a soundproof wall because on the other side of the wall is the washer, dryer, and furnace.
Okay.
And so anytime I have to do audio recording, it's like, turn everything off.
I absolutely understand. That's why I'm sitting in my it's a garage. That's what it is, with no fan on. But
yeah,
the sacrifices we make for audio.
Yeah. I've got it pretty good now. I bought this Blue Jean denim material insulation.
Mm-hmm.
That is amazingly good at sound absorption, far better than even fiberglass.
Really? And, I looked at that stuff.
Really like it.
I'm just using standard. Like
it's so much nicer to put up. You just stuff it in and it's done.
It still comes in like bat, like kind of cut bats like that?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
No itching, no worry. Just put it up and go.
Yeah, that's always nice.
More expensive, but it's worth it in my mind.
Not like drastically. It's not twice the price or anything, is it?
No, it was, I think I'm spending like $4 a bat.
Okay.
Okay, for per piece. Yeah, that's not terrible. Not at all.
I can't think in my head what fiberglass costs. That sounds reasonable to me, but everything is so much better than fiberglass in terms of insulating. So I would absolutely be for that, especially if you're getting the sound.
It's about 50% to 100% more. So twice the price to 50% more or something like that.
Okay. I want to say I got unfaced bats for 2x4 walls that were 11 pieces.
You're making me itch just thinking about it.
11 pieces for $12. Maybe it was $1 a bat for that, pre-cut to stud length.
Yeah, I won't touch unfaced stuff. That's just taking it too far.
And then, in the attic, I'm doing R30. That's like 10-inch tall unfaced. Yeah, tons of insulation.
I'm
actually allergic to fiberglass. So.
What's that, Naomi?
You're doing R30 with fiberglass?
Yeah.
Okay.
it's what's easily available.
I understand, but we've gone down this road far enough, and I have made the decision that here and now is not the appropriate time to chastise you for your poor insulation choices.
Yeah.
Let's move on to woodworking.
Right. Yes. Let's.
I have actually been doing some woodworking in the shop, though.
Do tell.
I'm finishing up my new bench. My old bench, because I'm turning everything around for videoing, my old bench is 8 foot long, but my shop is only 11 foot wide, and I need to go width-wise in the new setup. So I had to build a shorter bench to fit in there.
Okay.
But this is like just shy of my dream bench, and it's all maple and white oak and live-edged and all the expensive vices.
It looks absolutely fantastic. Can I ask you a couple questions about it?
Sure.
That live edge board you have as a stretcher, am I correct that that's only on the outside face? So not the face you're working on, but on the camera face? Okay. So because it is the bench that you'll shoot from, the intention is not to work on that side?
Yes.
Okay. Because aesthetically, I think it's fantastic, but I would think that it compromises your clamping ability on that side a little bit. But if you're not going to work from that side, that doesn't matter.
Yeah. No, and that's, I'm kind of going back and forth because I love the Roubaud style, the thickness of it. But I wanted to go slightly thinner because I'm only making it 5 foot long. I need as much opening underneath So I made the legs slightly smaller than I would normally make them for a Robo, but then putting it on the, putting a skirt on the far side, then still gives me that stiffness of a Nicholson skirt.
Right.
So I kind of get to take up some of that, that excess with that, but I still have full access on my working side underneath the top. So I don't have to mess with the skirt on that side.
Okay. Okay. And another thing, if your shop is, you said about 11 foot wide, even if you're not trying to shoot, isn't an 8 foot wide bench enormous in that space?
Well, normally I would have been aiming, originally my shop would have been going lengthwise because it's 25 foot by 11 foot.
Okay.
The actual working space. And so I would have run it lengthwise, but it is ending up being far more convenient to shoot video lengthwise and work lengthwise. So.
Okay.
Things you have to do when you're working with video.
Am I right that with the way you're doing, you know, hand tool work, the vise is literally at the, not just emotionally, but physically at the center of the shop? Well, I guess now it's kind of at an end, but when you're, when, if you're using that long bench
my
in
main
the long
leg
space.
Vice, my main leg vise is pretty close to center of the width.
Okay.
That yeah. Other than that, I've actually been working on the backdrop behind the bench. That wall will eventually be completely covered in tool storage, so you have a plane till, saw till, and that type of thing.
Okay, and that, those are the like the pre-finished panels that you picked up that were much easier and cheaper than actual salvage lumber.
Yeah, yeah. It's pallet wood without the all the holes from the nails. So. Yes. The funny thing is, it was sold on a pallet, so. I
Two for one. It's not bad. Yeah.
But I'm also building a live edge shelf right now to go at the top. And I'm kind of having fun with that and playing with different ways of putting up a shelf with hand tools. And so it's a interesting experiment.
How are you putting it up?
Yeah. What do you mean?
I'm making triangular cleats to go underneath it.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
And they'll be spaced to go in between where I want eventually to put the plane till and the saw till.
Okay.
But they'll be shaped in a little bit more of a style to fit with the live edge of the actual shelf.
Okay.
Very cool. Is your concern just with the mechanics of it or I mean are there risks or challenges by doing it by hand?
No, it's just I wanted to do – normally when I hang a shelf, I'm you know, getting some hardware designed for hanging a shelf, whether it be, you know, a cleat that goes in the wall or, a you know, an invisible hanger that embeds in the back, and actually making the hanger for it is just something that's a little bit different. I've never actually done that before.
Yeah. It's good to branch out every once in a while.
One of those obvious things that's like it, just a cleat. What's difficult with that? But when you think about, you know, putting – 50, 60 pounds of wooden planes up on it. It's you have to think about it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm. It's I tend to over engineer and overthink my my work, but yeah.
I just bought some wooden shelves and or metal shelves rather, and they lock in and
I don't know. Works great.
Yeah, it works. But Anywho.
What's, I don't know. Has anything been going on around the web that's piqued your interest?
There's a web?
I mean, depending on how busy you are, yes. Or technologically secluded.
There is lots going on the web that has piqued my interest. Very little of it has been woodworking related lately.
There you go. Well,
not to say that there isn't interesting things going on with woodworking, but there is some stuff that is going on woodworking-wise, not strictly on the web. But, Sean, I believe you should have received Ace's book by now?
I have, and I sadly haven't been able to do more than thumb through it, but yes.
I'm true of the same. When I got home from vacation, it was sitting in the mailbox. So within the next couple weeks, we'll certainly be reading through that and having him on to discuss it. But Asa Christiana, the former editor from Fine Woodworking, has a new book out, which I believe is in pre-order now. I don't think it's actually been released. I'm not 100% sure.
I believe it's coming out in September, so it's right around the corner.
Yeah.
So.
and it's crap.
I don't have it in front of me.
Working Wood with Asa, I believe, is the name of the book.
No, it's not.
Shit.
I seriously can go get it.
I need to look it up. But it's a book. It's a book that he couldn't do at Fine Woodworking because it's frankly a little bit more basic than Fine Woodworking stuff. It's a really nice primer for getting into woodworking. I think it would cross the divide from, you know, not necessarily the online maker community, but more of a, when I think of online maker, the maker community, they do a bit of everything. And I think this is going to be less woodworking than most of them do. But that being said, if you get somebody who's into making a lot of stuff and doesn't know woodworking, I think this would be a good intro into it.
It is called Build Stuff with Wood.
Build Stuff with Wood. There we go.
Yep.
Build Stuff with Asa is his website. I'm sorry.
Ah, there you go. There you go. So it looks like, and again, we'll have to talk about it in more detail coming up, but it does. It looks a little simple if you consider what Fine Woodworking magazine produces or publishes. But it looks like, I mean, some decent ideas. I'm interested to see, you know, what if his style kind of comes into it and how approachable it is for different levels of woodworkers.
I've tried to do this a couple times and haven't yet succeeded, but I was out walking the dogs with my son last night and I told him I'm going to give the book to him and he needs to read through it and pick something and then try to make it with him and see how the instruction of the book works with somebody who doesn't, you know, do woodworking. I thought that would be a fun thing to do, but also a good barometer as to how effective the book is. But looking through it, you know, Taunton books, Fine Woodworking, Fine Home Building, they have a very definite aesthetic, and this follows that for good or for bad. I think in this case, it's good because it follows a very clear format and everything is very clearly explained with pictures and diagrams and stuff. So I anticipate it to be a very easy thing to follow.
Yeah, for sure. I have no doubt. On that line, let me bring up a couple things that I saw recently. Wood Whisperer and Mrs. Wood Whisperer, his lovely wife Nicole, put out a video together. She's obviously known in his community and in the woodworking community, and it's always been rumored that she likes to turn. Although I've seen it very seldom. But they kind of got together and collaborated on remaking a spatula where she turned the handle and then he refined the spoon of it. And it was a nice little, a quick little video they just put out. And that's that was cool to see. Most recently, Dave Pesciuto of Make Something.
yes, that's where he's from.
Formerly Drunken Woodworker. He put out a bed build, a super simple, like home, big box store lumber put together bed thing. Mm-hmm. But it totally got me thinking, considering I've got a bedroom that I'm essentially building that is completely open and blank.
Okay.
Other than we've got some like secondhand furniture coming in that's gonna be a stylistic look to the room, but I don't have a bed frame yet. And so I was like, I really might build a bed frame, which would be, I mean, and super simple, like for my son, like, doesn't need to be fancy, but it would be kind of a cool project for us, I think.
Would you build it with him? Your son is not with Dave.
Oh, yeah.
well, no, I guess you could have Dave over and build it with him.
I reached out to Dave. I said, hey, that wants you got me thinking about doing that. And then I asked him, like I said, any other projects you might want to, you got in the can that might work for a blank slate? And I sent him a picture of a room that's like bare drywall. He goes, that is a blank slate. You're right. So I don't know. We're hemming and hawing some ideas. We might get together to make something else other than the bed. He's done the bed thing. I don't think he doesn't need to do that again. And it wouldn't be the same size as he did. But two things that I noticed. I think they're pretty cool. Look them up.
Absolutely. All right. So that brings us back to you, James.
Yes. What about James? Let's start because I'm looking at James' video and he's got a bunch of race tags behind him, and say yay for race tags, because mine are all in a pile in my bedroom. But otherwise, are you an avid runner?
Totally, I'm an ultra marathoner.
Oh, are you really? Like what? what's your 30, 50? What do you do?
Well, I'm currently training for a 50 mile.
Okay.
That's not until April, but I have, 450 Ks on the books right now to do in the next couple months.
50 Ks, you said?
Yes.
50 K. Yeah.
How many miles is 50 K?
32.1 or 32.2.
Okay.
It's a marathon plus.
Mm. Yeah.
A 10K.
But I'm hoping to do 100 mile next fall. And then my long-term goal is a race called Bigfoot in the next 5 years. And that's a 200-mile race.
Oh, my God.
And eventually, over the course of the 3 days or so it takes, it's as if you ran from sea level to the top of Everest twice.
Oh, my gosh. Not in elevation, but distance.
In elevation.
Oh, in elevation. Holy cow.
Yeah, it's 60,000 feet of elevation over 200 miles.
Oh, my gosh. That's crazy. Anyway, I didn't really want to dwell on that.
I don't know how to respond to that. I guess I'm impressed, but you're crazy.
Yeah, that impresses the heck out of me. I can literally in this conversation say I only do marathons. Like, and it's enough for me right now.
I walked the dog for 2 miles yesterday.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Marathon is a good weekend run.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. I mean, at this point, 20 miles is not that much. So I hear you. Let's talk about woodworking. So as previously mentioned by myself, hand tools. You always been a hand tool guy?
No, actually hand tools is a new thing for me, relatively.
Okay.
I was raised from the time I was about 5 years old. I was in the wood shop with my dad and making furniture since I could. And that was all power tools. The shop my dad and I used, it was a friend of ours, and he had dedicated routers. He had an entire wall of dedicated routers to each router bit. He had two table saws. He had a 30-inch surface planer. He had I think it was a 12-inch joiner, the whole nine yards. And so that's what I grew up with. I never touched a hand plane until about 2.5 years ago.
So, oh, wow.
Up until 4 years ago, I had a full-blown woodworking shop, joiner, planer, table saw, whole nine yards.
What happened?
Yeah, what happened? What made the change?
Before my youngest reached 3 years old, we moved 5 times.
Oh, my God.
And wow. Every house got smaller, and every move was like, well, I don't want to move that tool again. And we got rid of more and got rid of more and got rid of more. And then our last house, we moved to that one, and I sold everything. And I basically just threw up my hands. I said, I guess I'm not doing any woodworking for a while.
Wow.
And it was kind of one of those things that was painful, but that was the way life was going at that time. And I became a stay-at-home dad, and lots of things were changing. And then we moved to this house, and there was a space in the basement that we weren't planning on using for anything. It was 8 foot by 10 foot. And I saw a video of a guy online making a grooving plane. worth the effort.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Great YouTube channel. I love his stuff. But he just made this grooving plane. It was just kind of one of those aha moments of like, okay, I've got to do that. And so I went to a garage sale, and with $12, I bought a handsaw, a cheap set of chisels, and a junk hand plane. And with those three things, I started building my bench and started doing everything. And it's kind of cool because without having the dust, without having the noise, without having the power tools, I can have the kids in the shop with me. Mm-hmm. So being a stay-at-home dad, I can have them in here, and I've built a bench for them. And so, yeah, actually, if you look at my YouTube channel, it is the entire extent of my hand tool world. Literally from the day I bought my first hand plane, I have a video up of that. It's my first video.
Wow. That's pretty cool. I won't say I came from exactly, I mean, it's similar. You know, I grew up, and my dad still has, a very power tool centric shop with very, very few hand things that, he has a couple block planes, but, and a couple of hand saws, but really doesn't do much else with them. And, mine was more of a kind of just a comfortable decision. It wasn't that I had moved or had ever had a major setup of my own. It was just Yeah, that seems interesting.
Yeah.
And kind of, I mean, fell down the rabbit hole, literally, and just, you know, bought two planes, and then those were crappy planes, and then slowly got some better old planes, and then some saws, and then some chisels, and yeah, and just kind of filled in my tote a little more as time went on. But yeah. I don't know. So do you find that your work has it slowed down but gotten better all at the same time?
I would say my quality has regressed.
Okay.
But that's because of learning a whole new art.
Sure.
And I think that's the most enjoyable thing for me is I've been working with oak for 20 some years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the last 2 years, I've learned so much more about it because I'm working with the grain. I'm playing with its figure. And it's kind of like uncovering this whole new world that I've been standing on my whole life. And mm-hmm. And so part of that is, you know, learning new things, being willing to mess up. And, you know, I don't care about quality. I really don't. I'm not the high quality, high end, fine furniture maker. Mm-hmm. My whole goal is the shop is a place to have fun. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're focused on the quality, you know, making quality stuff is fun, but if you're focused on the quality so much that it is, it's something it's keeping you up at night or you're fighting with yourself over a tool, then, I don't like that in a shop. And so I'd rather build something that is kind of not quite up to snuff, but I had a fun time doing it, or I was doing it in some new weird way that I was learning something new and kind of playing with things and experimenting. So
I can really appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
Even as different as our methods of working are, I think that's why that's why I'm in the shop. I think many people can resonate to that regardless of how they're working.
Yeah.
So does that mean, James, that you're trying, as you build pieces, you're doing the same type of thing in different ways on each piece so that you keep exploring and playing and learning? Or do you get down to a method where, you know, this is the way you like to cut a mortise and tenon and you cut it the same way every time because you like doing it? Or do you like figuring out the new way to do it on the next project?
There are so many different ways to do things. And I like trying them all.
Okay.
And it will take me a lifetime to actually try everything until I find something that I really like. And so I think half the fun for me is the experimenting and the playing with something new, you know, trying a new tool, trying a new style, trying a new way of holding it, a new way of standing. And so I never practice on anything. Any joint, any dovetail, any way of doing something is in a piece that I'm intending on keeping. And so I like to experiment and do it in such a way that this will be, you know, what I'm going to hold. And I think that's something that a lot of people are afraid of because I like the idea of doing something and being okay with it not being perfect and knowing that I'm doing something for the first time. I know it's not going to turn out well. That's one of the stupid things about YouTube is it's hard to show off imperfections because it's so everyone kind of sees it and assumes that everything is perfectly flat. Everything is, and it's not something you can show off as well. But anytime I can show a joint or something like that, be willing to do something that is subpar, and learn from it.
Absolutely.
If you're not willing to jump in and try something and mess up, then you're going to stagnate.
You can't make the piece so precious that you're afraid to build it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now the techniques you're using, the methods of building, you're changing from project to project to project to explore and mm-hmm. learn and try different things. Do you let your desire to try a given technique dictate the project you build? Or is it basically you have a house, you have certain needs, you have to build the nightstand next to you. You're going to build a nightstand and you build it how you figure out. You know, does need dictate what you're building, or does just desire to build a certain way dictate what you're building?
I build off of my build list of what I want to accomplish next. And most of that is due to the series of working in the shop and now changing over the shop and building new storage for it and things that I just have to build.
Okay. So
because I'm a content creator, it has to go out.
And presently that's a lot of shop fixtures because that's what you're working on.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And I'm it's my goal in the next year or two to get to the point where I've completed everything that I intend to complete for a standard functioning shop. And at that point create things for educational need as opposed to my need in the house.
Now, okay, so that year and a half, that's just to get the shop built out, or that's to get the shop built out and the stuff you need around the house, a given bed or nightstand or whatever you happen to need. It's that's things also.
Build the shop out. There's very little furniture that I actually want to build for my house myself.
The dresser took it out of you?
No, I'm going to be building a dining room table, and I'm probably going to be building a bed, but those are farther down the road, and there's no pressing need for them.
Okay.
But like the when I talk about the shop, I'm talking about, you know, the storage, but I'm also talking about I want to make a spring pole lathe and a flywheel lathe and a foot-powered scroll saw, several other things like that I want to build the tool for the shop.
Oh, okay. So that's what I'm thinking. Your build out of the shop can't be radically different from mine. We're talking about almost the same size space. It only took me 9 months, so I can't figure out a year and a half. But if you're starting to build that kind of equipment, that's a big undertaking. Each one of those projects is a big undertaking.
Yeah,
for sure. And you kind of like, just like you'd like to learn all the aspects of it. That's why you want to try the different lathes. You want to, you know,
see what
the nuance is about them.
My other big goal is my drive is to teach. I really want to share this joy that I've found with hand tools. And if I lock myself into one particular style or methodology, I can only teach that one style or methodology. Whereas like recently I feel now I'm fairly comfortable with most Western saws. I don't have any problem with that. I can keep them online and I can saw to a line without any issue. But a Japanese saw still is painful for me. It's not something I'm really comfortable with. And so I'm trying to incorporate those and I'm trying to force myself to use them when I would just normally turn around and grab a panel saw and rip something. I now have to force myself to grab the Ryoba and teach myself that skill again. So it's,
did you have the skill
in that way? No, but learning how to cut something.
Okay.
Again. I know how to cut something with Western saw. Now I have to teach myself how to cut something again. And every saw has a different mechanic and a different way of holding it and a different way of feeling how it's cutting through the wood. And until I learn all those different methodologies and tools, I can't teach them. And so that's why I want to experience as much as I can so that I can show how to do something on a spring pole lathe or how to do something on a flywheel. You know, how to do a dovetail 10 different ways with 10 different sets of tools.
Ambitious.
And fun. I think the most enjoyable part for me is learning something new. With that moment when it actually clicks and something fits together, it's just like, oh, it's goosebumps.
So it truly is the journey.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And hand tools are great at teaching you that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and specifically like going to pull saws compared to Western push saws, essentially. I mean, there's a completely different feel to that.
Yeah.
I mean, I've used them both. I can't say I've really perfected either, but, there's not, you know, it seems like there's like a guidance to pushing a Western saw where you don't have the same opportunity. It's kind of willy nilly. You just really have to trust other mechanics of it to make those work.
I don't know. I think we have a good friend of the show who would disagree with that.
Well, he pulls it backwards anyway.
We're going to have him. Well, we're not going to have to. We should and we want to have him on to talk about his upcoming book.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But anyway, we digress. Anyway. So, is there, I'm intrigued by your jumping around to, you know, you want to learn these different things, James. So what you've just described is you know how to stall one way, so you're going to learn to stall a different way. I don't mean to suggest that I think this is wrong. I'm just interested by it. Why learn to saw a second way? Why not learn to do something other than sawing? Learn to shape or carve or something you don't know how to do. You know, a different skill set rather than a different way to do something you already know how to do.
Oh, I'm doing that too.
Okay.
It's, you know, every time I have to cut a board, you know, I guess I could pick up a chisel and carve the cut, but please don't. I've got to cut the board, so if I'm comfortable with one way, I'm going to try it a different way. But I'm also, you know, picking up carving and riffler work and other things like that. And a lot of them are skills that I have learned before with power tools, like turning.
Okay.
You know, I'm comfortable with turning, but once I get into a spring pole lathe, I mean, that's going to be a whole other thing. Or, you know, a treadle lathe of pedaling while you're turning. And rather than being able to move your body around, you have to stay in one place and move your arms to it. And so that's something that kind of enthralls me. But, you know, those aren't going to take time away from learning to saw, because that's another task.
Right.
Do you process everything from rough lumber by hand?
Yep. Everything is rough lumber or, I actually do have a stock of lumber that I have riven out of boards. So from the log itself with a fro, and then plane it down into a flat surface and make my lumber from that.
Excellent. And wow. In just a few years, you've built your skill set all the way that far. That's very impressive.
That is probably my greatest talent, is I can, if it's something I can do with my hands, I can learn it very, very quickly. I can pick up something and get its feel, and my muscles learn things really easily.
Can you juggle?
No.
What's that?
Can you juggle?
I can.
I can too.
You are just a better man than I am.
Can you not juggle?
No, I can't juggle. Why would I juggle? God.
It's just playing catch with yourself. It's really,
I can't do that either.
Of course you can.
I used to do five balls. I couldn't quite get the sixth.
Oh, man. Okay, but, you're better than me.
That was,
I can fumble with four. Can't do five.
All right, I'm sorry. I took us off woodworking again, but I'm certainly impressed, because we've discussed many, many things that I don't have the aptitude to do tonight.
Well, you know, I also get a lot of people who, I don't like to talk about how fast I learn things, because that tends to scare people off. It's something that naturally comes easy to me, but there are things that anyone can learn.
Oh, absolutely.
Like carving, for instance. Carving scares people off like you wouldn't believe. But if you get a V-gouge and you draw a line on a board and you give them a mallet, anyone can carve that in a matter of 5 minutes. You can pick up V-gouge tracing, and that's just the, you know, the tip of the iceberg. And once someone sees that they can actually draw a picture with that and do it freehand, and it not turn out half bad, and they'd only spend 5 to 15 minutes on it, then they want to try other things. And it's one of those things that until you try it, you have no idea. And so many people are just afraid to try it. That's what I want to try and break through.
No, and I think that's a really good point. And the fact that my dad learned to carve, I think, speaks for it's really not that hard. but some of the stuff you've done, the joy that I see you have doing it, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe you kind of put aside the odyssey of your dresser for a while to carve the clogs and all the different stuff you got into carving. And it was clear that it was just, you know, really fun. And I see that my dad is more power tool than I am in every way, except that he carves. But, you know, he's got, you know, I don't know, he's probably got 40 chisels. all the different types and he sharp all the crap that goes along with carving. And he absolutely loves it. And the stuff he does comes out very nicely. And I really don't mean that to say that, you know, if he can do it, anybody can do it. But it is the kind of thing where you put your head to it and you step by step and you learn. It's not rocket science. It's just a matter of putting the chisel to wood.
Yeah. Now, and like with the dresser, when I started that, you know, with power tools, I could have knocked the dresser out in a week or two. And I knew exactly what to do it, and it wouldn't be much of a challenge for me. Whereas with hand tools, when I started it, 90% of what I needed to do for that dresser was something I'd never done before. But I still wanted to jump into it, do it. I'd never, you know, re-sawn boards before. I'd never done that many dovetails all freehand. You know, I'd never done the large joinery needed for it.
Mm-hmm.
There were just things that I'd never experienced with hand tools, but in telling myself I'm going to do this project, it forced me to learn it and learn it on the job in that particular piece.
Okay. So was it that you needed a dresser? Was it that you wanted to do a big case piece out of hand tools and learn all the techniques that went with it? Was it a bit of both? How'd you arrive at that?
Well, from my power tool background, you know, I had a whole list of furniture that I wanted to build. And so, you know, with a power tool, you build the furniture and you build the next one, then you build the next one. And I just assumed, you know, jumping into hand tools, I would do that. So I built a coffee table right off the bat. You know, I built my bench first and I built a coffee table. And then I was planning on jumping straight into the dresser and you know, that being the only project that was in the shop.
Mm-hmm.
But then I got into the dresser and it was just, I could suddenly see how big of a project it was. And that kind of got to a point where it wasn't as exciting. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, planing down 80 board feet of white oak by hand to thickness and surface was a lot more work than I was expecting. And that kind of became boring. And so I'd find something else that would be enjoyable and I'd do that until that boring part had left my brain, and then I could jump back into it and do more of it. And so that's why my mindset to building things changed drastically around that time, because I left that power tool mindset of you know, you build a project, you build another project, you build another project. Whereas with hand tools, it's a little bit more of, if you're going to take on a big project like that, you've got to pace yourself. And
Okay. Cause I thought you were going to go down a route of you need to do other things to distract yourself, which I guess is kind of the same, but the way you phrase it makes a lot more sense in that it's a fair amount of work to build something like that out of power tools, but with hand tools, it's, you know, tenfold the work or whatever it happens to be. And The monotony of it, I'm assuming, just as interesting as stuff is, by the time you've planed your 15th or 16th board, it's not so much fun anymore.
Yeah.
Okay.
I actually did the calculation on it, and I did it was 85 hours of nothing but surface planing.
Oh, for the dresser. God.
And it was all out of slightly over 4/4 rough sawn white oak. And that stuff doesn't plane very quickly.
No, it doesn't. No, it sure doesn't.
Even with a power tool.
No, this mantle that I'm working on is the first thing I've made out of oak in a while, and I've remembered why I don't so much like oak. So think, you know, in those terms, I know, for instance, Shannon chooses a lot of his wood based on what works well and easily with hand tools. Mm-hmm. Oak doesn't strike me as one of those types of woods.
No.
So
no.
Is this just an anomaly and you are trying to pick woods that are easily worked by hand tools, or that's part of the challenge and the interest is doing woods that don't, or how do you choose your wood?
A little bit of different. Well, number one, I got an amazing deal on 400 board foot of white oak. I got it for 50 cents a board foot.
Oh.
Half of it was quarter sawn. And so I had this, you know, 400 board feet of white oak sitting in the shop. Well, I guess I'm going to make the next project out of white oak.
Okay.
But number two, there is that challenge to it. And one of the things I love about white oak is very rarely is any of it straight grained. You know, it's very crunky. It goes everywhere. The grain is constantly switching. So every board you pick up is a whole new experience. It's something new, and you get to learn where it's growing here, and you know, you're planting one direction here, and on that end of the board you're planting another direction, and I find that fun, and that kind of breaks up some of the monotony of constantly planting something.
Even though you're planting all day long, each board is different to plant.
Yeah, and you get to learn about it and try and, you know, figure out what this board wants to do. But then on top of that, it's very challenging, but white oak is extremely rewarding, especially with, you know, boiled linseed oil on it, that just it explodes with, you know, ray fleck and the grain going everywhere. And the particular stuff that I'm using has been air dried for 15 years.
Oh, wow.
And a large chunk of that was outside in the weather. And so it has this deep, rich color to it that is, it's phenomenal. And every time I put finish on it, the thing just explodes and it makes every moment worth it.
It's a good reason.
Yeah, I'm talking about my love for white oak.
you're a champ for working even lovely white oak with.
But then the fun part is, you know, I get used to doing it, and then I get a piece of really nice straight grain cherry or walnut, and it's just like, oh my word, this is so easy.
Yeah, that's like a dream.
Everything's just flowing. I mean, the planes are going through it like butter.
All relative.
Yeah.
And, you know, compared to 85 hours of service plating, this is really petty, hypocritical whining. But you talk about the differences between the woods. With the headphone rack made out of walnut and even purple heart is just weird to work, I find. But versus the mantle, which is oak, even working power tools, I noticed what a huge difference. But the oak is just not fun to work. It's tedious.
You look at it fun, it gets tear out.
Yeah. Yeah, well, an 80 grit belt sander will fix that. I think it's right now it's like 60 grit belt sand, and I'm feeling it now. It's rough as hell, but that's the next project, is to sand the whole thing smooth, but it will be. But all right, so Sean.
Yes, sir.
What does that bring us to?
I think that brings us to our fortnightly, we'll say drink choice. I won't force beer on people, because there's been plenty of other good suggestions.
There have.
So our fortnightly drink choice. And I told you about mine, I'll mention it now, that I found in the store just this evening at Founders, a wonderful Michigan brewery. I think this is the first Goza that I've seen them make. And I know you hate them, Diami, and that's fine. But they made... so when you... Anyway, it's Green Zebra, which it has an image of a green zebra on it, which is very interesting. But it's basically a watermelon sour. And it's fantastic. So if you're into Gozas or sours, and you can get Founders. I don't know how far this one's going around. It's very, very new to me.
Can you get a Goza that's not a sour?
No. The Goza, well, so Gozas are brewed with salt water. They're not necessarily sour, but they have a salty taste to them, or a salty hint, at least.
So you don't need a pretzel afterwards.
You don't need a pretzel. I don't know. I'm going to have to eat pretzels next time I have one, just to see what that's like. But, so yeah, I mean, that's sour doesn't necessarily mean lemon sour or citrus sour. It's a different kind of thing. It can tend to go vinegar, and this is not nearly that pungent. It's actually quite nice. I don't like watermelon per se, but it's got real watermelon in it, so pretty good. Anyway, how about you?
All right. Well, I have Otter Creek is a Vermont brewery.
You're still on your Vermont beers, huh?
No, well, I was just upstate last week, so close to Vermont, and I grabbed it while I was upstate. So I do actually have a handful of beers left over from when I went to Vermont in May, but this is only from last week. So it's the Otter Creek Backseat Burner IPA, which is their mainstream IPA. This is the first one I've had. It's a little too bitter, quite frankly. I think it could use a little touch of sweetening, and I realize that IPAs are a bit bitter, but still, I think it could use a touch of sweetening. It's got the Citra hops in it.
Hops.
So mm-hmm. it's the citrus portion of it is very nice, but I find the dry bitterness to be just a touch out of sync with the citrus. So I don't know. It's a valiant effort and it's good, but the aftertaste is a little bit too dry. I guess I'll put it that way. Worth getting if it's what's out there, but I wouldn't necessarily seek it out.
I heard a thing recently that the New England IPAs are starting to fade.
Mm. Vermont's going to go out of business if that happens.
Well, there's at this point, everyone knows what they're doing, and they're the heavy-handed. They're the
yes, they are. You can't put enough hops in a beer, according to the people in Vermont.
Exactly, and so that's I think the favor for that is kind of falling off. So, be interested to see how that landscape changes.
I think that's probably worth it. I mean, there are some breweries that absolutely get it right, but there's a lot of them where it's just, wow, this is just a lot of hops.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not that. I mean, this is good. It's not great, but it's good. Some of them, you can't finish the can, or they're just like, yeah, that's not the case. This is a decent beer. It's not a great beer, but it's a decent beer.
Excellent.
Well, that's a ringing endorsement, isn't it?
Yeah, it's okay. I listened to a beer podcast, and they rate their beers that they taste on the show as try, buy, or die.
Okay.
And so it's like if you hate it, you want it to die. If you'll try it, it's like it's out there. If you see it, try it, but maybe not go looking too hard for it. Or if it's really good, you go seek it out and buy it.
This is a try then.
Yeah, it didn't say that try. Fair. Very fair. James, stop smiling. How about you?
I'm one of those odd people who don't drink.
No, you're not odd.
Sprecher's Puma. I just picked up another one of those today. Do you guys know Sprecher's?
No.
I don't know Sprecher's.
Sprecher's.
No, wait, it's the C-H, S-P-R-E-C-H-E-R, right?
Yes.
Yes, I've seen something about it.
They're a Wisconsin brewery, but they're more known for their soda. And they make high-end different sodas, but they're all named after an animal. Well, except for a couple of them. But
why do I
their
think
Black Puma is fantastic? Black is cherry.
A black cherry. I was going to say it's either grape or black cherry. I don't know why I was immediately thinking that, but interesting. Yeah, I definitely have seen Sprecher's around here, but I don't know if it's like do they do club soda or something like that?
Yes, they're known most for the root beer. They have a very traditional root beer that's it's different than most root beers.
It's different.
Yeah. It has a lot more of the earthy root flavor than the A&W sweet.
Right. It's a different kind of sweet. Mm-hmm. I think my boys have tried it, and I think they prefer that. Although they don't always get root beer, so it's just like a different flavor for them. Well, that's it. All excellent. Right, well,
James,
see, that's
thank
why
you.
I say fortnightly drink choice, because it's not always beer.
On the one level, I have no issue mentioning any fluid at all in this category, but right. I am partial to the beer choice name.
Yeah, okay. I'll give you that.
But that being said, James, thank you for coming on and putting up with our talk about weather and renovation and beer. So, you know, people will clearly be engaged by what you had to say and realize that of the three of us, you're the actual woodworker. So where can people who want to, you know, jump this podcast ship as quick as they can before it sinks, where can they find out more about you?
You can find me anywhere the cool people are. YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, all Wood by Right. Wood by Wright.
All right. And is there some way
on YouTube
people could listen to you once a week that they might be interested in?
Yes. There's also the Crafted podcast. There's three of us weirdos who get together and talk about all things crafted. It's welding, woodworking, leatherworking, whatever we want to make.
Awesome.
Because you named them as weirdos. Who are they?
Zach Herberholst and Johnny Brook.
Excellent.
Crafted Workshop and ZH Fabrication.
Excellent. Well, that just about wraps up the show for this episode. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts or Google Play Music. Just search for the Modern Woodworkers Association. Then you'll be sure to never miss any of our exciting episodes. While you're there, please leave us a review.
And thank you for listening to the Modern Woodworkers Association. If you'd like the show, please be sure to visit modernwoodworkersassociation.com. Follow the MWA on Twitter at @MWA_national. If you'd like the MWA on Facebook, or circle us on Google+. The best thing you can do is tell a friend, because word of mouth goes a long way in sharing our discussion.
Thanks for having us.
I'm Sean Wisniewski of the Corner Workshop, and I'm at SeanW78 on most social medias, Untapped and all that jazz.
And I'm Diami Plotke of the Penultimate Woodshop and ModernWoodworkersAssociation.com. I'm at Diami Plotke on the Twitter and Facebook, and I am at Penultimate Woodshop on the Instagram. So until next time, go find yourself some rough sawn white oak and get a sharp blade and flatten.
Absolutely.
We're actually recording already.
Oh, cool.